It's 12:37. Colder air associated with a strong front is filtering into central Illinois. Despite passage of the front, there were still areas of fog and a few sprinkles late this morning. A slow drop in temperatures is expected through the afternoon, and as the readings fall below the freezing mark, any remaining moisture will likely freeze, creating scattered slick spots on area roads, bridges, and overpasses. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, there's a chance of snow flurries. The temperature will slowly fall into the 20s, and the wind will be out of the northwest from 10 to 15. Miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with scattered flurries, a low of 16, and a wind from the northwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny and cold with a high of 20 and a light north wind. Tomorrow night, snow likely with several inches of accumulation possible, the low 14. The wind light and from the north. The outlook for Thursday, cloudy with a chance of snow, the high 20. Thursday night, partly cloudy and very cold, the low 2 below zero. Friday, partly cloudy with a cold, with a high of 11. Friday, partly cloudy and cold with a high of 11. Friday night and Saturday, partly cloudy, not as cold. The low Friday night around 10 and the high Saturday in the low 20s. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the upper 20s to the mid 40s. At O'Hare Airport in Chicago, it was 27 degrees. Bloomington Normal reported 30. 35 at Danville, 36 at Effingham, and Carbondale, it was 39. At the top of the hour at South Bend, 34. Terre Haute reported 37 degrees. It was 36 at Lafayette. Indianapolis reported 39 degrees, and in Evansville, it was 45. At Willard Airport at noon central time, 34 degrees, cloudy with some fog. The dew point, 33. The wind out of the north at 14 miles per hour with gusts to 20, giving us a wind chill index of 23. The relative humidity was 96% in the barometer, 29.82 and rising. And at 12:39, 32 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. Small business owners no longer have to purchase a scanning device or pay processing fees to be able to accept credit cards, thanks to a device and smartphone application called Square. Square was developed by Twitter co-founder Jack Dorsey. It lets businesses collect on-the-spot payments with a cell phone. Vanessa Romo reports from Seattle.
Jeff Barber and Kurt Scheuer are standing at the top of a steep driveway looking out over a freshly mowed lawn in Old Agoura Hills in Southern California. Barber is holding an electric weed whacker, and Scheuer is holding his iPhone.
I'll go get the homeowner here.
Together, they own Hybrid Lawns, an environmentally friendly landscaping company. And using Scheuer's smartphone and a small gadget called Square, they're about to bill a client for a month's worth of work.
We got the $70 in here for your monthly payment,
all right.
And I'll take your card, and it's simple, just a quick swipe like that. There we go, it's authorizing now.
Scheuer and Barber started their business 2 years ago when the pair were laid off from their respective construction jobs.
And you've been approved. So I just
Since then, they've been mowing lawns, pruning hedges, and scooping up leaves for about 20 clients. But Barber says, like a lot of small businesses, they've had trouble collecting regular payments.
We were trying to go paperless because we're eco-friendly, but for the most part, you know, we just emailed people. You know, email, here's your bill, you know, pay us your bill, send us a check, here comes a snail mail. Sometimes they kind of drag their heels a little bit.
They say getting paid can sometimes take weeks, which is why they got the Square device, a credit card reader about the size of a postage stamp that plugs into the headphone jack of either an iPhone, Android, or iPad. So now when they show up at the pretty yellow ranch house, Jackie Lacombe can't do what she usually does with a bill.
It sits there forever and I forget about it, so this makes it great because it's done. As soon as they, you know, come by with the bill, it's here, I'm finished.
We dramatically simplified the way people can start accepting payments so that you can accept them from anywhere.
Jack Dorsey is one of the founders of Square. If his name sounds familiar, it's because he's also the co-founder of Twitter. Dorsey says he was thinking about entrepreneurs like Scheuer and Barber when he came up with the idea for Square, on-the-go small or micro business owners. Square opened its doors to the public in October. The device and the software are free. The company takes a flat 2.75% of each transaction plus 15 cents, cheaper than fees charged by most other credit card payment systems.
And you have to pay up a bunch of these setup fees and monthly minimums and other fees that look a little bit odd. All you have to do with Square is download it, sign up. We give you a free reader, and you can start accepting card payments.
Square is now processing millions of dollars in mobile transactions every week. More than 45 million people in the U.S. have a smartphone. And as money exchanging portals, they're a fairly untapped market. Right now, there are only a few products. There's Intuit, another credit card swiping device made just for the iPhone. Also, a handful of banks let you deposit checks by taking pictures of them. And Chase allows person-to-person deposits via email. All of this virtual moving of money has people worried about fraud. John Herring of Lookout Mobile Security says that's why companies like Square have built in stringent security measures from the start.
They're using very strong encryption and a number of the best industry practices. Now it's going to be very important that anyone adopting a mobile payment technology make sure that they're taking steps to keep their mobile device itself safe.
In other words, treat your phone like your wallet. Don't leave it lying on a park bench. Herring says rather than fearing the future, think of it as extreme convenience with a little common sense security.
When we look at mobile payments in general, I think that it's really the future in terms of payments.
Smartphones are the fastest growing segment of the mobile phone market, which means mobile payments are growing as well. So the next time you're eyeing a brownie at a PTA bake sale with no money and no checkbook, you may want to ask if they take plastic. For NPR News, I'm Vanessa Romo.
Most pianos have 88 keys, but Australian craftsman Wayne Stewart has designed a piano with an unprecedented 102 keys. The Stewart & Sons grand piano has a distinctive sound that one pianist describes as clear and crisp as white wine. Neva Grant has that story.
It weighs 1,400 pounds, but can sound as fragile as spun glass or as tough as a foghorn. The Stewart & Sons grand piano has 14 more keys than most, which means the lowest and highest notes live very much on the edge. To show you, let's first sit down at the Yamaha Grand at NPR with a typical 88 keys. On the left-hand side of the piano, you can go down this low. On the Stewart piano, you can go 9 notes lower. Now the high notes, first on the Yamaha Grand. We can go up to here. And on the Stewart, 5 extra notes up.
I would hate to go back to playing an 88-note piano. Can't stand it. Too limited.
Piano designer Wayne Stewart says a few other grands can play as low as his 102-key model, but none can play as high. It's a great feat of acrobatics, you might say, but those extra notes really aren't that musical. So why have them? For color, says Stewart, and resonance.
There's a tremendous amount of energy there in the low octave notes. You can hear the power.
Actually, you can sense the power, even in pieces where the lowest notes aren't played.
Beethoven might have actually loved the sound of the Stewart piano.
Concert pianist Gerard Willems has recorded most of Beethoven's works on a Stewart Grand. Willems says Beethoven only had about 70 keys on his piano, and he would have used more notes if he'd had them. But don't focus too much on the keys, he says. The Stewart piano has other innovations. Its strings vibrate differently from other pianos. So even when you play many notes at once, says Willems, each sound rings out clear and separate.
It's almost like sort of taking wool and you pull the wool apart and you can feel and you can sense and smell each different layer of the sound.
But if the Stewart piano is going to attract more attention, it has to attract living composers to write for it. And that's starting to happen.
It's probably the best piano I've ever played on.
New Age jazz musician Fiona Joy Hawkins has composed pieces for the Stewart piano. Listen for those whispery high notes.
What it lends itself to is the ability to get a lot more from a single note. It just doesn't have any bend in the decay. It just goes straight. It goes forever. So you get these incredible harmonics that last.
Some people say the Stewart has a distinctly Australian sound, as clear and bright as sun on the beach. But even here in Australia, the instrument has its critics. Pianist and music professor Jeffrey Lancaster would not say this piano is sunny.
I find the sounds very cold. They don't have that dimension of warmth that, say, a great Steinway does. It's this clarity, this so-called clarity, this crystalline quality. It's really quite icy.
The Stewart Grand can't expect to compete with a giant like Steinway. Only about 40 of the pianos have been sold worldwide. But Jeffrey Lancaster says the Stewart raises an important question. When do we stop innovating?
The idea back even 150 years ago was that each piano should be a masterpiece in its own right and should not necessarily resemble the piano that was made before it. That's changed, of course. We now have pianos from many fine makers around the world, which are all fundamentally the same. So I'm all for innovation in the modern piano.
And how you innovate, he says, depends, as always, on personal taste. And if you want a Stewart, you'll need personal finances, too. The top model costs $300,000 delivered. For NPR News, I'm Neva Grant in Sydney.
WILL programs are made possible by Amber Glenn Alzheimer's Special Care Center in Urbana. Amber Glenn incorporates residents' past routines and interests into their daily lives, engaging residents in choices and daily living patterns. More information is available at 384-0100.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 18th of January, 2011. It's the birthday of A.A. Milne, born in London, 1882.